Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 20th day of December, Anno Domini 2025, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 9 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. For your edification and delectation, here comes the news. But Before we get to the news...
Yes, folks.
It's the Rumble edition.
Matter of fact, I even had... I was over... eating out last night for the usual fish fry.
Yes.
And what couple of the folks go, so it is official next Saturday, this Saturday is the Rumball show? I go, yes. He goes, well, I'll be listening. Yeah. And I heard a couple other folks say the same thing.
Now, the first hour may not be that different, but the second hour
is going to be amazing. All right. First today.
Uh-huh. There we go.
Oh.
Good.
Well done, sir.
Yes, sir. That will do.
A week of fermenting. I told you, last Saturday, I went home and put it all together, wrapped it up, and it was sitting into the refrigerator until last night when I pulled it out and sat there and rolled them and put them in the 10X sugar, and voila, you have it.
It's a lot of rum.
Yeah, it might be.
Smooth.
There's no open flames around here, right?
Matter of fact, I even got harassed today. I had to do VE testing for ham radio over at RIT.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guys there go, and I didn't think I'd get busted. They go, wait a minute. Aren't you doing rum balls this Saturday as a show? Yeah. Where's ours?
Uh-huh.
Busted.
Well, it's good to be popular.
All right. Well, I can still talk. I'll read the news.
And another thing.
I love you guys.
I just wanted to know something.
Apple and Google have both issued emergency patches after zero-day bugs were caught being actively exploited in what the two companies described as sophisticated real-world attacks. Over the past few days, both tech giants have rushed out updates to kill vulnerabilities that attackers were already abusing against an unspecified number of targets, once again forcing users already to patch first and ask questions later.
Strong, I tell you.
Strong. Smooth. Apple pushed fresh security updates across much of its ecosystem, including iPhones, iPads, and Macs, fixing a pair of bugs in WebKit that it says may have been abused in an extremely sophisticated attack against specific targeted individuals. As usual, Cupertino was light on the technical details, offering little more than a warning, and that's putting it politely.
Right, yeah.
Offering little more than a warning that the exploits were real and already in circulation. Google, meanwhile, shipped a Chrome stable channel update addressing multiple security flaws, including at least one zero-day that was already being exploited before a fix was available. The high-risk bug was described as an out-of-bounds memory access vulnerability, with Google acknowledging it was aware of an exploit in the wild. Neither company has spilled many technical details, but Google credits the discovery to Apple security engineering team and Google's Threat Analysis Group, a unit better known for tracking mercenary spyware vendors and state-backed intrusion campaigns than for chasing everyday malware. That attribution strongly hints that this spyware-grade exploitation is rather than an opportunistic fly-by hacking. The flurry of fixes adds to a growing zero-day tally for both firms. With these updates, Apple has now patched 9 vulnerabilities exploited in the wild so far in 2025, while Google has been forced to tackle 8 Chrome zero days this year, a pace that suggests attackers continue to prize browsers and mobile platforms as some of the most lucrative and vulnerable real estate around. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple, Google, issue zero-day patches. Your choices are, I'm up to date. I'll update right now. I'll get to it. Relax. I don't use either browser. And going commando, baby. So far, we've got 28 votes, and I'm up to date as barely in the lead over I don't use either browser.
Okay.
Well, and what you have to remember is that there are only three browsers, right? There's Safari, which uses WebKit.
WebKit, yep.
There's Firefox, which uses their own K-something. Right. I forget what it's called. And Google, which uses Chromium, and everything else uses Chromium. So if you're using Brave or Vivaldi or any one of those, you're using a Chromium browser, which is essentially Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
So update. And who knows if Firefox has been hit and just hasn't talked about it yet.
Right. Well, and the beautiful part is these are not updates that are going to hit your wallet, right?
Yeah, they're all free.
Right, so do it. I don't know what you're waiting for. All right, and of course, if you want to vote in the poll, it's real easy to do. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Wow. Better have
another rumble.
Yep.
Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And... of course, if you want to talk about that or dang near anything else, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. And Dennis and I have been talking about electric cars.
We have. I learned as I came into the studio that we are both in the market, as it were.
We're both in the market for cars.
Yes.
Maybe electric.
Yeah, right.
Right.
And so, I'm trying to justify the slightly larger upfront expense versus the much less fewer expenses over time with maintenance and other things, and also trying to understand how my general lifestyle would change, because I've been driving since I was 16, and I've developed some habits that would be different if I chose to go with a different energy platform, so to speak. So I'm working through these all of these things, and Nick has been listening politely, and he has his own thoughts, and he has his own needs, and his transportation lifestyle is a bit different than mine, because he's blissfully retired.
Blissfully retired, thank you very much.
Well, and I'm still grinding it out at the jobby job, so.
I've not been listening politely, I've been listening avidly.
Yes. Well, yes.
That's more important. I've been listening avidly.
But we're both recognizing that we have more in common than not regarding this, in terms of what we're looking at and what our needs are and what our price range is. And I've been in this market for roughly 3 to 4 weeks at this point, and I've done a little bit of putting my posterior in seats and seeing what makes sense and what doesn't. And, you know, getting a sense of, is this really laid out well? And, of course, I'm a usability nerd, so I look at, when I sit in the seat and I don't lean forward, what can I still touch on the touchscreen, and what can I reach and what can I not reach, and what can I do without looking, and what requires me to look away? And the other thing that I did not bring up in our discussion yet is that there is this tension in car design right now between safety systems that would really prefer that you keep your eyes on the road and will happily let you know when you are not doing that. Versus the interface that exists on this pane of glass to your right that you need to use in order to change the radio station or...
One thing I will insist on, is physical buttons.
Yeah.
Not every button has to be physical.
Right.
But a bunch of them do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to have to look over at the screen. I particularly don't want to have to go through four screens.
Right.
To do something while I'm driving. No.
So there's a big brand that starts with a T that will probably not be your favorite then.
Then I will not be looking at that brand.
What about one other thing that you guys weren't talking about much? I was just curious. Charging stations.
Right.
You have, you know, before, because I'm sure your situation versus Nick. Yep. Nick doesn't have a garage.
Right. Okay.
So his charging station is going to have to be literally outdoors and convenient that, you know, playing shuffle the cars because his wife's car versus his car where he places it, you know, and having it hooked up.
Do you have a driveway or are you parking on the street?
No, driveway, no.
Okay.
No. We park in the driveway and I park in the back always.
Okay.
So I know where I could put it. And really, I don't have to put the charging station outside. I only have to have
cord.
The wire outside.
Right. Now, is that part of the charge when you buy a vehicle?
No, that's an extra.
That's a...
Generally.
That's That's an extra. There are some manufacturers that, here's another thing I learned, that up until recently were funding a program to help subsidize the installation.
It has been last year. Yeah.
What I learned was the dollars that they set aside in that fund were happily used by lots of wonderful customers and are no longer funded, even though their website says that they are. When I worked into it just a little bit further, I found that that was no longer available. The general pricing seems to vary quite a bit for having that installed at your home, and it depends considerably on how much work needs to be done to go to your electric panel and verify, number one, that your house has enough amps of service.
Yeah, the break out a 220 line to...
Right. But I would say, in my particular experience, we switched from an electric clothes dryer to a gas clothes dryer a while ago, and the line that we use for the the electric clothes dryer could be rerouted and put into my garage, and that would meet my needs. Now, that means I have less for an electrician to work on, right. But your needs could be different, particularly if they need to go through lots of layers of stuff in order to get from the inside of your house to the outside, and if that's made of stone or if that's made of brick or if that's made of other things, you know, your mileage may vary, so to speak.
Right.
So that's an angle. I think what I've learned so far is that the significant price savings in, you know, what I'll call cents per mile comes when you do your charging at home, and the convenience also comes when you do your charging at home, and when you get into your car, then you have the majority of your mileage available immediately, and you don't have to stop anywhere on your way out.
Right. I already get in and out of my car every day.
Mm-hmm.
I have to walk right past where the charger would be plugged in.
Right.
So
Not a huge deal.
Not a huge deal. Plug it in when I get out of the car, unplug it when I get into the car, and I am done. And I never, and I always have a full charge. Well, 80%, I would charge it to 80%.
Sure.
And I don't ever have to worry about it. Perfect. Thank you. Done. Yeah.
Talking about the electric cars and, you know, the charging and all that, a couple on Facebook, they have these things called reels.
Yes.
Sure.
And I was watching one of these reels, and all of a sudden this Gen Zer was upset because they got an electric car, and they found out they have to pay to charge their car.
Well,
you go, why? It's electricity. Shouldn't it just be able to?
Yeah.
They
and were they recording this video on the phone that they also had
totally
to
blown away that they had to pay when they, you know, go to one of these charging stations to charge their car.
Right. They thought it was like just a municipal water fountain.
Yeah. They could just go up to and hook it up and, magically, you know, it comes out of the air and does it.
Now, I will say there are areas where there are chargers that are free to use, usually near public parks, where I work, the parking garage used to be owned by the city of Rochester, and they signed up for some, probably a grant or something else, and chose to make that one free to use. That being said, it's not the fastest charger around, but it's something.
Better than poking the eye with a sharp stick.
Hey, it's going to be sitting there for 8 hours, so you're going to get a decent amount of charge.
So there are websites. I think plugshare.com is the big one that you can go to, and it will list all the charging points that it knows of. And you can filter by which ones cost which amount. I will say that the whole industry around charging is still very fragmented. Each one of these groups, whether it's Electrify America or other groups, all have their own app and all set up that you need to put a credit card on file with each of them. And while the connector to get into your car may be physically compatible, you still need to have a relationship with the company providing the service. And the other thing I'm still working out, and there's a lot about this that I don't know yet, is how do I determine what the price is without walking up to it and clicking the, hey, what's your price button? I presume that there's a place where this is published. I just don't know where it is. But compared to gasoline, where you literally can read the gigantic numbers
Gas Buddy
from the street, you can read them as you drive by. They're giant, usually piercing red, and you can read them at any time of day or night, and they're as tall as a person. The electric pricing is just not as present. So I'm still learning about that, and perhaps a listener knows more about this than both of us and can call in and educate us. That would be a fantastic thing.
Now, I know on Google Maps,
okay,
you can add charging stations.
Okay, so that's a overlay.
But it doesn't give you pricing.
Like Gas Buddy. You know, I use the app Gas Buddy.
Right.
And you can go in there, and it'll tell you, as you're driving around town, you know, the different gas stations, you can see the little bleep,
yeah,
and it'll tell you the current price that last reported.
Right. So those things are good. The other factor is, and this would be weird if we were talking about this in a gas engine, if you went to a gas pump and the gas pump was only able, it was able to give you a gasoline, it was able to be at a reasonable price, but it only came out as a trickle.
Yeah.
So you had to stand there for 15 minutes in order to fill things up. You'd wonder what was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But there are different capabilities of different chargers to deliver electrons at a certain
rate. The number
rate
of volts and the amount of time it takes to get those volts in.
Right. Well, and your car may have
right
different capabilities to accept those. And the pipe may not be exceptionally wide in your car, or the pipe may not be exceptionally
charging
wide
rate. Yeah.
Sending. So matching those up is important if your time is of the most importance.
And on the other hand, one of the things people are talking about is range anxiety.
Sure.
Oh my God, I can only go 300 miles on a charge.
Right.
I don't go 300 miles in a month.
Right. Well, yeah, you have to understand what your needs truly
right
are.
In my case, if we go on a long trip, we take my wife's car. It's a gas car.
Sure.
If it's a short trip, I can take whatever car I want.
But if it's for buzzing around town, and going to the grocery store, and going to the coffee shop, and going to the bookstore, or going to the library.
Exactly right.
And you just need something to buzz around town, then this could be very, very helpful. There are people who do road trips this way, and it is definitely possible. They're generally stopping every few hundred miles, which I'm of the age where my bladder is what dictates that, not my car.
It's going to take me 15 minutes to hit the John, look around,
yep,
maybe buy a drink.
Yep, pack of gum.
Pack
whatever
a gum, get back to the car.
Yeah.
Why not let it charge during that time?
True.
Who cares?
The other thing to know is that many cars will happily entertain you while the charging is happening.
Yep.
You can play videos or movies or use your internet connection while you're sitting there waiting for it to finish up.
Yep.
So I think the manufacturers have done a really good job of trying to soften the parts that used to be kind of a rough edge. I think things have improved considerably in the, I'll say, 10 to 15 years that this has become a more a popular option for people. So I'm interested to see where things go, but I'm also interested in hearing from, you know, again, from listeners that may have experience with this or
pro or con,
positive or negative, right? It's all interesting because I have no skin in the game at this time, but I'm interested in hearing what does reality look like for people who do that.
Me either. I'm still making my decision. It could end up being an ICE vehicle,
ice,
internal combustion engine.
Yeah, that's right.
Or an EV. So
right,
ICE or EV are the choices.
Or hybrid.
Hybrid.
Somewhere in the middle. Or a here's the other angle, a plug-in electric hybrid.
Right.
That you charge up. It has a smaller battery, which means, number one, it charges to a large percentage much, much more quickly.
Right.
And it might give you, say, 40 to 60 miles of range.
Which is still more than I drive in the average day.
For all getting around town. And then if you decide, Nick, that you say, oh, my wife's car is in the shop or is unavailable or your daughter borrowed it or what have you, you still have the ability to run that on gasoline and get however many hundreds and hundreds and thousands of miles away that you need to, and have the quick fill-ups that you're used to. That's still an option. Does mean that you have essentially two drivetrains in the car, and that would require maintenance, and there's more complexity involved there. But
right,
all things to consider.
Right. And you've still got an exhaust system, which
true
is the one thing that I've gone through in my car.
Yes, my last two cars have been, that has been the death knell. And one of the challenges where we live in Western New York is that the roads are salted in the winter, and that does
help
us. That does help us, that the plows have salt and help clear the roads and keep them from getting icy, but it has the side effect of being really, really rough on metal surfaces like the cars are made out of.
Yeah, shockingly.
Yeah.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah. So we'll see. It's going to be an interesting next month or two. I'm not going to do anything till after Christmas, but that's just a week. So
sure.
Come January, I'll be
out looking.
I'll be out looking.
Yeah. So we've talked about some local dealers and the types of experiences I've had there, which have been overwhelmingly positive, and their knowledge base and their options and what types of products are out these days. So I'm interested to see where this goes for both of us, and we can certainly keep comparing notes.
Yeah, let's keep comparing notes. I'm actually kind of excited about it. I feel sad. I mean, I've had this car for 16 years.
Yep.
I love this car. It fits me. I fit it.
It's been part of your life.
It's been part of my life for 16 years. And we took it on many, many road trips and did all kinds of stuff with that car. But
I think like Marie Kondo, we have to thank it for its service.
Exactly.
And we have to let it move on, and then we can move on too.
Exactly. We'll see. We'll see. It's a sad day, but it'll be... You know, it'll be nice to have a car that actually has a working clicker.
Okay.
Which I don't have
for
right
unlocking
now.
Your door.
For unlocking the door. That would be nice.
I'm looking, just
trying
a little
trying
things.
To accent the positive.
Right.
All right. We're done with the first segment of this show, but there's a whole lot more of the show coming along. We'll have a lot more Dave Enright, a lot more Dennis Worster, a lot more Nick Francesco, and a lot more you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. It is 30 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, excuse me, we are Soundbites. And we have had a rumble.
We are Soundballs.
Soundballs. All right. And, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free. 1-800-790-0415, and we'll talk about computers this time, I promise.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I'll read the Microsoft news. Microsoft made a big push this year with Copilot. They put their AI chatbot into a special line of laptops and have also tried to integrate it into other tech products. I should have said every tech product.
Yeah, they're really...
Key word, though, tried.
Integrating.
The latest place you may find Copilot is on your LG smart television, whether you want it or not. Earlier this week, LG smart TV owners found that suddenly they had the Copilot app on their TVs, and they couldn't get rid of it.
Yay!
As you can imagine, this caused a tiny bit of a kerfuffle.
Mm.
So after a whole lot of tourists, LG has relented, and now you should be able to delete the Copilot app, or at least you'll be able to pretty soon. Here, we're shoving this down. Do you remember when Apple put a U2 album on everybody's
on your iPod? Yeah.
And the
iPhone.
Storm that you're happened like, because of that?
Right. Well, yeah.
Apple took away a book. I forget what book it was. Not Apple. Kindle. Amazon. Took a book away from people because they lost the electronic...
They lost the rights.
...publishing rights. And they took a book away from everybody. People lost their minds.
Yeah.
And now suddenly it's good to shove Copilot up everybody's throat?
Well, yeah, especially, one, you didn't pay for the TV. Two, you're not paying for the online service that I'm paying for out of my pocket each month.
Like, whose TV is it?
Yeah. Right.
Well, yeah. Microsoft is killing off an obsolete and vulnerable encryption cipher that Windows has supported by default for 26 years.
Okay.
Following more than a decade of devastating hacks that exploited it and recently facing blistering criticism from a prominent U.S. senator. When Microsoft rolled out Active Directory in 2000, it made RC4 the sole means of securing it.
I was wondering if it was one of the RCs. Okay.
Yeah. Within days, a researcher demonstrated a cryptographic hack that significantly weakened the security it had been believed to provide. Despite the known susceptibility, RC4 remained the staple in encryption protocols, including SSL and its successor, TSL. Everybody else stopped using it a decade ago. Last week, Microsoft said it was finally deprecating RC4, but not until mid-2026. That's right. a massive known vulnerability will continue to be out there for another half a year.
Hey, we're
Microsoft.
We're working on it over here.
Yeah, working on it over here. Hold your horses.
Just relax.
You've likely come across quick fix warnings or even seen those attacks yourself. A rogue pop-up or fake captcha tasks you with copying some text and pasting it into a Windows command before pressing enter. This usually runs a malicious script which downloads and then installs malware on the PC. Quick fix has now evolved. Say hello to consent fix.
Okay.
Same idea. It tricks people into giving attackers access to their Microsoft accounts. The method uses a browser-native prompt that persuades victims to copy and paste a link. Once the link is submitted, attackers can access without needing a password or multi-factor authentication. What's Microsoft's answer to this? Don't do that.
Yeah.
Hey. Thanks, Microsoft.
Gee, I would have never thought of that.
Microsoft announced on Monday that it will soon block mobile devices running outdated email software from accessing Exchange Online services until they're updated. So, if you've got an older device that can't update to the latest version of Exchange Online, you'll lose access to your email. Thanks, Microsoft. Updating your operating system has always been vital, though the very last thing anyone needs is a confirmation from Microsoft that yet another Windows security update is broken stuff. So we have one. This time, it's VPN access for a certain subset of users. Microsoft has yet to provide a workaround for users who are affected by the issue, but has said that it is under investigation, and additional information will be shared as soon as it becomes available. Thanks, Microsoft. Microsoft makes me tired, but we never tire of you, so give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0400.
That's where I got into a discussion with a person at work and talking about Microsoft Defender.
Okay.
And I told him, no, don't use it. Granted, you know, the problem being is they, yeah, granted, it'll catch stuff.
It is very good.
It's good for
what it is. But.
But.
The one problem is it's good when it's current.
Right.
The problem is they don't update it as much as the other programs that we recommend, the Super Anti-Spyware and the Malware Bytes, because, you know, with that program, heck, I can go just about every few days and all of a sudden they're doing an update to one or the other of them to the database file that, you know, wants to put into it, say like Super Anti-Spyware. Whereas Microsoft, it could be a month. And you could be infested with all this stuff, and you're wondering why you're getting this junk mail or this or that. Well, I got the Defender on there. It's supposed to be doing a good job. It will for maybe that one day. And it's almost like they're waiting for them to come out with it, and then, boom, they throw stuff out there that get right around it, and, like, ho-hum, didn't slow them down one bit.
As always, Patch Tuesday is followed by Exploit Wednesday.
Yeah.
And that makes, that's the way it works. I use ClamAV on my Linux boxes.
Okay.
And it checks every night.
Okay.
And, you know, every couple of days there's an update of some sort or another. It all happens in the background. I don't have to do anything, thank you. And it all works. It's called Fresh Clam, and I just run it in the background.
I use the Super Anti-Spyware, the paid version there. And it's one of the best things I could do. You know, it just keeps I'm constantly, like you say, at least 2-3 times a week.
Yep.
It sits there and says, oh, there's an update. I just click OK, and it goes ahead and grabs the file and puts it in there for me.
Yep. Well, we've talked about this so many times. Microsoft, when you are running a Microsoft operating system on your computer, you do not own that computer.
Mm-mm.
Microsoft owns that computer. You just get to use it.
Right.
And so if Microsoft wants to do something like throw Copilot on, you don't have much to say about that. If they want to take something away from you, you don't have much to say about that. You're just the user. You're not even Microsoft's customer, because we've talked about that before. They're a publicly traded company. Their customers are their shareholders. You are the product. Your money is the product.
I knew something was up when I started seeing ads pop up in the taskbar.
Yep.
That was about the point where I said, oh no, they've escaped out of the browser and are now in my taskbar.
It's everywhere.
And then I said, when I first saw it, I said, oh, clearly there's some sort of infection here, or clearly they've signed up, the person I was working with had signed up for some weather bug app or some other app had dutifully warned them that, by the way, we're going to do this, but they said, oh, I don't really mind. And then the next thing you know, they've got ads in their desktop and in front of their wallpaper and on their taskbar. And that was when I said, oh, geez, Microsoft, okay, you've officially sold us all out. Congratulations, I guess.
Well, they don't make enough money. They make money. They make money hand over fist.
Right.
They are rolling it. They are Scrooge McDuck rich.
But it's, like you said, it's not.
But it's not enough.
It's the nature of where we are in our capitalist system right
the
now.
The question that,
it's about
that
growth,
their shareholders
consistent
ask
growth
is how much money did you make for me last quarter?
Right.
And how much more are you going to make for me this quarter?
Right. Yeah, and there's only so hard you can squeeze.
And there's only one place they can get that money. That's us.
Right. And unfortunately, they're not the only company trying to do that.
Well, exactly.
We're getting squeezed from, in a dozen different ways every day. And
Google is doing it. Apple is doing it. Everybody's doing it.
So now as customers, I won't say consumers because that's what they would call us, as consumers and not customers. I would say as customers, we have to act defensively to figure out how are we going to do that? Or how are we going to live in a world where we don't have ads projected onto the back of our eyelids as we sleep?
That's next. You get those Meta glasses things.
Right.
That's next. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Rick from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Rick?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'm glad I got in early on your show. How about Linux questions? I'm Windowless now. I converted everything over to Linux Mint Cinnamon.
Interesting.
Congratulations.
On a bunch of different computers. My questions are a couple of things. When I'm running updates, not always, but enough times, I'm getting this error message. It comes up and says, an error occurred, download performed, unsandboxed, a bunch of numbers and all that. And then when it comes back, it says, your computer's up to date. Well, am I?
Maybe. So here's the deal. What's probably happened is an error at the other end. And what they mean is there was a download error from their end, or you're out of room. Check how much disk space you have left.
Okay.
But
something about that transfer didn't complete successfully.
And
error checking.
And that other than that, you are up to date.
Should I use like a local mirror instead of wherever I'm going to?
Well, ish. What happened is, let's say that the program you're trying to update is LS, which is a built-in program. It's not going to update. I get that, but you're going to update LS
or say GIMP.
GIMP. You're going to update GIMP. So it goes to download GIMP, and it can't. So now you've got two choices. It can either say, "Oh my gosh, everything is horrible," or everything else updated except GIMP, so you're as up to date as we can make you right now.
Okay, I'm not getting any of those. I mean, I might get one program that's going to update, or maybe six. And then when it does it, and it comes back error, it doesn't tell me what did or didn't take.
Mm.
If you do another update, it should tell you what didn't update by saying this needs to update.
Okay.
So do a second update immediately, and it'll tell you. You'll see which ones still need to be updated.
Right. Yeah.
So basically what you're telling me is that I do have an error and I need to fix it because I should be updating when I'm not.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So again, check that you have enough space on your hard drive, because particularly if you're downloading something large like the GIMP.
Sure.
It's
the
huge.
Maybe large.
And then it needs, as with Windows and the Mac and everything else, let's say I download 100 meg to update. I need 200 meg in order to have enough space to install that 100 meg.
Yeah, your computer needs a little room to maneuver.
To do all the temp files and the
decompression,
shifting things around and decompressing and everything else. So however much you're downloading, you need a minimum of twice, and you're safer with three times as much space as is actually required. You know, when it says, for example, downloading 1 gig, well, you really want 2, if not 3, free on your drive.
Sure. But we'll presume at the moment that you've got enough space and that the download, some portion of it is failing. My best, Nick is correct that in the GUI, the update tools will probably give you an error message. If you need more detail than that, I don't know how comfortable you are at the command line in Linux. Maybe you are, maybe you're not, but I can tell you that on the command line, it's more common to get details as error messages, and that maybe if there's a way that you can run, I don't know, what Yum update, or how are they handling that?
I believe apt is what's used in Mint.
Or apt update.
And the other thing is there is a cache for downloads, and you can clear that cache by typing at a command line sudo, which is sudo, super user do, space apt apt space auto clean, all one word.
Good to know.
Okay.
And that will clean out, that will do several things. First, it will remove old versions of the operating system that might still be sitting around.
Right.
It will also clear out the cache in case that has in some way been corrupted, and then try downloading again or updating again.
Yeah, I like that. And you said you had another question?
So on a couple of the computers, they're older. There were ones of Windows 7 and an old Windows 10 that couldn't be upgraded.
Okay.
I had Bluetooth, and I had to put an adapter in. Well, when I converted them, I didn't think about that, I guess, and I went to put the adapters in, and everything is Windows, and it's not reading the CD, so I can't get that. How can I get Bluetooth on these older computers?
It doesn't have Bluetooth built into it.
No, I had to use a little adapter.
Right, something like USB.
Right,
yeah.
You're right. There are a lot of products out there that are Windows-only products because it is much cheaper to use the Microsoft driver than write your own. So what you need is to go to, there's got to be a list somewhere of...
Yeah, what we call a hardware compatibility list with Linux Mint, to determine which pieces of hardware, which little USB dongles that you plug in, are compatible with either the built-in Bluetooth drivers that Linux Mint has or with a third-party driver.
Yeah, so Linux Mint actually has a page for Bluetooth adapters for Mint. It says here 21, but I don't think that matters.
Okay, and we can take the link to that and put it on the Soundbites webpage so that Rick can find that.
Yep.
And then Rick, you can do a little bit of detective work and determine which model of Bluetooth adapter you have and see if it's on the list. And if it is, great. And if it's not, then that list may give you some ideas about what to replace it with.
All right. Well, great. And thank you very much, and happy rumballing.
Thank you so much.
Oh, it's quite happy. Thank you so much.
All right.
So we'll get that on Soundbites page. And then Rick can check it out.
Yeah, okay.
But that's always something to factor in, is when I switch operating systems, what level of support for my existing peripherals will there be? And it's something that I've had to deal with 10 years ago when I was taking old laptops and trying to put Linux on them, and they happened to be Apple equipment. It turned out that sometimes some of the things that are built into Apple laptops, like Bluetooth or like Wi-Fi, didn't always have drivers, and that was a challenge. And now things have gotten much, much better since then, but keeping track of those things so that they don't become unfortunate surprises is really important.
It's a challenge at times, yeah.
All right, well, I did that wrong. Okay, so I'll do that later.
I know you'll fix it.
It'll
be good.
I'll fix it at the next break.
Yes.
And you guys are right. The thing is that not particularly with older hardware.
Yeah.
And particularly with inexpensive hardware.
Right.
The companies put a lot of the lifting on Microsoft.
Yeah.
And, for example, there were Bluetooth drivers, there were Wi-Fi drivers, there were CD-ROM drivers that were all built into the Windows kernel that companies said, we'll just use those, and we will not bother to do anything else.
Right. Well, and that's good for the customer, too, because when they get that box home and break it open and take the thing out and look at it and plug it in, Windows detects it automatically, says, oh, look, here's this thing that I know about. Ah, I know how to talk to this. And it just works. So the customer's happy. The manufacturer's happy because they didn't have to write any drivers. There's a lot of upside there. But
right.
when you get out of that Windows ecosystem, then all that stuff is completely up in the air.
Right. And so, for example, with my NUC, I bought a NUC, a next unit of computing.
Okay.
And it was wonderful, except it had no Wi-Fi.
So
I did about 15 minutes of research.
So for listeners who might not be familiar with the NUC as a concept, so it's a form factor that's like smaller than a shoebox.
It's essentially the size of a Mac Mini.
Okay.
And it's in my case an Intel
like a large i5. Paperback book.
It's a large paperback book, an oversized hockey puck.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. And it's a an i5 with 8 gig of RAM and a terabyte hard drive, and it's a beautiful little box.
So it's a modest computer, but its primary advantage is it's very low power, and it does not take up a lot of space.
And I'm just using it to serve my Plex stuff.
Sure.
And so it just sits in the corner, and I never have to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the place I've got it, I don't have a cable for it, so I had to plug in a Wi-Fi connector.
Adapter, yeah.
And it did not have Wi-Fi. So about 15 minutes of research, I said I need a Wi-Fi adapter that plugs in USB and is compatible with Linux. It popped up a half a dozen. The one I bought was like $10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Plugged it in. Windows went, oh, I said, hey, look what you've got now. Here it is.
Yes.
Boom, up, done.
Ah, I see you've plugged in one of these.
Yeah, exactly. So it's doable. You just have to do a little research beforehand. And not just look for an inexpensive USB dongle, but an inexpensive USB dongle that works with Linux.
Right.
So it's an extra search term, basically, is all that is. But it's certainly doable. And it's one of the things that we talked about last week was I put I have a Lenovo ThinkPad with a fingerprint reader.
Okay.
And it annoyed me that it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally got that to work.
Okay.
And that took a little bit of research because it is an uncommon one. Again, it was designed specifically to run with a specific Windows driver.
Right.
Now, this laptop is like 10 years old.
Right.
So even Microsoft doesn't make that driver anymore.
It's not getting the attention that it might have 10 years ago. Yeah. Yes.
But because it's Linux, somebody out there had the same itch
mm-hmm.
and scratched it.
Right.
And there's a driver. And so I downloaded the driver and installed it, and it works perfectly now.
And they're willing to share their solution with others.
And so am I. If you'll take a look at the Soundbites website,
okay.
you will see that under some important links,
there it is.
Is now one called Why and Why Not Linux.
Okay.
And on that one, that's the wrong one. Excuse me, I beg your pardon.
Rolling
I lied
back.
To you, right to your faces, I lied to you. Where is it?
Well, you didn't intend to.
I didn't intend to, but I apparently did.
David, where are you calling from?
Did I not put it there?
Oh, this is great radio.
This is great radio. I have to tell you that right now. All right. So, yeah, I didn't put it up yet. All right.
But he will. I'm sure he will.
It's it. Oh, you can do it. Okay. Here it is. Wait, hold on.
He reaches across the keyboard, tapping keys carefully.
Yeah.
Squinting down with an excited view.
I can't type.
Mm-hmm. He learns quickly and sees from the screen that suddenly...
If you go to asknick.com/Linux...
Yeah. Hey, I know that guy.
It's a great program and works
great. Yeah, right. asknick.com/Linux.
Okay.
You'll see all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
What can I learn there?
Why and why not Linux?
Okay.
Linux commands and their Windows equivalents.
Yes.
So it's a
yep, and you can export your
table.
So
of a Linux command, the comparable Windows command, and
right.
what that command does.
Okay, so for our listeners, give me a taste. What are the top two reasons why I should not go to Linux?
Oh, you should not go to Linux. What you don't get with Linux.
Yes.
You do not get forced telemetry.
Okay.
You do not get data collection you can't disable.
Okay.
You don't get ads in your start menu or anywhere else.
You know, these weren't the downsides I was expecting.
Sure. You don't get a forced Microsoft account.
Sure.
You don't get forced AI assistance.
Right.
Copilot, you don't get planned obsolescence.
Yeah.
You don't get software released without quality assurance testing, making you the beta tester.
You know, these were not positioned in the way I was expecting.
And you don't get exactly the same, but you do get exactly the same. Oh, you don't get exactly the same software you're using on Windows.
True.
You get very comparable software, but not exactly the same.
I think my favorite part about helping people get to Linux, especially those with older hardware where they may not have the means to get into something newer,
yes,
is that you will continue to get the security that's important to you, even on hardware that is older.
Yep.
And I think that's just a tremendously large value.
All right. We are done with the first hour. That's it. I want to thank Rick for calling in. Yeah, you, of course, can give us a call. All you have to do is dial 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. While you do that, we're going to take a little bio break. We being Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. For some reason, you're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. Computers, we're talking about Microsoft and Apple and Linux and electric cars and pretty much anything you want to call in about. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's sound bites. Like I said, we're going to take a slightly longer break. Maybe have another rumble. There's an idea. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with sound bites on truly and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to the second hour of the Rumball Show.
Oh, yeah.
Here at Jazz 90.1. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And Nick will be back in just a couple of moments to rejoin us. But before that, I had a caller calling David.
Yeah.
And he had a question. I've talked about it for a while, and I know a few of our other listeners have latched onto it, too. It's, you know, because it's the end of the year, you know, you're probably looking at closing up your books on your say your banking software,
right,
you know, whether it's QuickBooks, Quicken, or whatever. And he was wondering about the program that we recommended, because I got tired of Quicken or QuickBooks, that all of a sudden now, that, like we've said before, a lot of the services are going web-based.
Yeah.
And you're just renting the product.
Right.
And they want a yearly fee to do the updates, and you've got to stay current, or otherwise, literally, they shut the software off. After your expiration date passes, they shut the software down, and you can't do anything more. So I came up with an alternative, because I also wanted to work with Linux, and that was MoneyDance. MoneyDance is a great program. You'd swear it looks just like Quicken. It works just like Wicked. As a matter of fact, you can take the existing file that you have for your banking programs and import it into MoneyDance. And it will copy in all your reminders and your balances and everything else. It's easy to set up. The other big thing is the support system. MoneyDance is a international program in that, you know, it runs on multi-platforms and it's worldwide. And if you have a question, you can, you know, post it up there, which I did on a couple of them, and bam, they get back to you within a day or two. There is a nominal fee, but it's good for the life of that series. So say yeah,
it's a one-time purchase.
Yeah, it's a one-time purchase for that series. So say I'm on, I forget the number, but say I'm on version 4.7. All right, any of the other, say 4.71 or 4.72, all that for up until it switches over to 4.8, is covered in my original subscription. Now, if all of a sudden they come out with 4.8 and it's like things like they added this, this, and this, and I look at the review and, yeah, I really don't need that, that's fine. I can stay with the 4.7, and it still works fine. It doesn't all of a sudden lock up and say you can't use it anymore, like Quicken. And it's like, yeah, no, I didn't need that. And I won't go back. I mean, it's been a great, rock-solid program. It does great backups and easy to set up.
Yeah. Well, and it's available on Windows and Mac and Linux.
Yeah, it's really all the platforms. Available. It's there, and like I say, great support. So if you're looking for something to start the new year and you're tired of paying the yearly subscriptions that, you know, that they're insisting on, you know, because like we've said before, a lot of the software is going that you're renting it. You're not, you don't own it anymore. Well, at least with MoneyDance, you do. So, you know, just as an alternative, check it out. And thank you, David, for calling in and asking about that.
That's very really nice. Cool. Yeah, knowing about alternatives is really important, and it allows you to make the best possible decision. So
well,
it,
and there
it helps
are a,
to know.
A great number of alternatives.
Yeah.
To Windows software for Windows itself and for Macs and for Linux. And one good place to go to is alternative2.net.
Yes.
And that will, you can put in the name of any program and it will tell you what the alternatives are for multiple other operating systems.
Mm-hmm.
They're not all going to work identically.
Yeah.
And there may be some that are like, well, this is sort of like it.
Yeah. Right.
You know, as you go down the list, you'll find they get a little further and further away from
right.
Well, the exact.
They're not going to always build the exact identical product.
Yeah, they can't.
They're going to
copyright.
Put their own tweak on it and figure out what's important to their customers or to themselves, and then publish that. And that means that if you have that list from alternative2.net, that you can help see and pick something from the list that most closely matches what you need. So that you're not adjusting to match the software. The software is leaning closer towards what you have in mind and then helping you in that way.
Right. And you're right, because in a lot of cases, people will say, you know, I wish this software did this.
Right.
Or I like this software, but it doesn't work quite the way I work.
Yeah.
Well, take a look at some of it, particularly if, you know, in alternative2.net, a lot of the programs you'll find are free.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurts nothing and nobody to download it for free
and try it out,
try
yeah.
and see what you think.
Right.
You know, it's not a big deal. So you can do that pretty easily. Alternative2.net has 133,000 apps and software alternatives ranked by almost 2 million users. So
right. Well, and I think a lot of this discussion started by it being the end of the year and thinking about closing out 2025. And I know we've only got a couple of weeks left, but I found myself in that situation where I was finally getting around to all this stuff that I've been meaning to do because I wanted to get it done before the end of the calendar year.
And that's where, again, you know, if you're cleaning up your computer, that's another program. Matter of fact, they've got a special going on right now, and they're not paying me to say this, but Revo Uninstaller.
Okay.
I have gone to, instead of buying, you know, one version for my one computer because I got multiple computers in the house.
Uh-huh.
I wound up getting the portable version.
Okay.
Right.
And it's
great. What happens
there? All you do is download it, put it on a flash drive.
Flash drive, okay.
So I can take this flash drive now and put it on each of the computers and, you know, start it up and go through and clean out some of these programs. Like you were saying, if you put a program in, you don't want to use Windows Uninstaller. It does a junk job, being polite, to get rid of it. You know, it still leaves all that junk there, complicating the registry, making it longer, more complicated, and slowing down your machine. Revo Installer will go in there and clean out the directories. It goes into the registry safely and cleans all that crux out, making your machine run safer and a little more reliable. Okay. Than what Windows would have done with it.
Also, and this we don't talk about this often, but the registry, when you delete something from the registry, all you do, all it does, is put a little marker in it that says this is no longer being used.
Yeah, it turns one bit off.
And what that means is all of the stuff that was put into that registry is still there, which means that over time your registry grows and grows and mm-hmm. grows. I have seen 2 gigabyte registries.
Wow.
And what's the very first thing Windows does when it's loading? It loads the registry.
Yep.
And then it goes through that registry to see what's still active and what it should do next. Mm-hmm. Well, people are saying, oh, my Windows is so much slower to load. This is why.
Mm-hmm.
If you use Revo Uninstaller and it uninstalls all that stuff, your load time will also be faster.
And it will go through and look through and see if there's any remnants of other programs that are no longer hanging around. It's got a whole laundry right. list of stuff that it'll go out there and clean it. You'd be surprised just to make, you know, keep your machine running safer. And it's relatively inexpensive. And like I said, for me, I like having the portable version. I just put it on a flash drive and move it from one computer to the other and keep the programs that I'm no longer using cleaned up and running right.
And be conservative when you run this and it says, should I get rid of this? If you don't know what it is, don't get rid
keep
of it.
Yeah,
right.
Don't.
Oh, one of the other things about this paid version that I like, too, is quite often, you know, when you go into Windows and say uninstall this, you can select the one program and it's got to uninstall it. And then you can go to the next one, click it, and uninstall. Revo Uninstaller, no. You can sit there, hold down the control key, and select the different programs you want to uninstall.
And it will get
them
up.
Then hit uninstall, and it sit back and watch it uninstall, say, 5-6 programs, whatever you selected.
Linux does that as well. Mm-hmm. If I uninstall a program, it'll come back and say, oh, you don't need these 48 other programs now. Do you want to get rid of them too?
Right.
Yes, I do. Yes.
The big one was dependent upon those other little ones.
Right, right, right.
And nothing else that you have is dependent right. upon those.
And same thing when you load something. If mm-hmm. it needs those things, it will load them.
Yeah, it'll go find them. And
right.
Yeah, no, I mean, for me and my ham radio stuff, the programs that I use for ham radio, they're updating because there's, I'd say, 9 or 10 different programs. And they're updating those yearly at least 5 to 6 times a year. If okay. not, a couple of them are even more than that. So to keep the older versions out and the new ones in, like I say, I'd probably have a registry that's over, 2 gigabytes, yep. no problem. But Revo Uninstaller does a great job of just keeping them running clean and worry-free.
And if you had them under Linux, it would only change or replace that one program.
Hmm.
And it wouldn't touch anything else. That's the thing I really like about Linux, and Mac does the same thing. You have, for the most part, you have configuration files. What Windows does is put all your configuration information in the registry, which is stupid. Because if I write a program that screws up a configuration file, I can screw up the entire registry.
Mm-hmm.
If it's under Linux, it screws up that one program.
Right. Program,
it's,
yeah.
Yeah, it's decentralized.
It's completely decentralized. And it means you have a lot of extra little programs on your hard drive.
So
what? Particularly now that people are buying terabyte drives, it does not matter.
Yeah.
It simply does not
right.
matter.
That's not the constraint that it was.
Yeah, no, the size right. of them, too, you know, maybe only a few K.
Right.
You know, it's minuscule.
So right. one of the things I did at the end of the year here that I've been meaning to do for several months is I was trying to figure out how to run a web-based tool, and I didn't want to have a computer that was driving it. I wanted it to be online so that multiple people could get to it. And I went to Amazon, and Amazon has this... It turns out Amazon does not make its money by selling us stuff and shipping it to our house. I mean, it does, but it doesn't make the majority of its money. The majority of its money is in use by its data warehouse and web services.
AWS.
Right. So pretty much any website that you go to, it is a very likely situation that that's going to
be Cloudflare or AWS. Those are your big choices right now.
So one of the things they offer is a very small micro service that lets you have a small computer and a small web accessible area and a small piece of storage, and they charge rent on it, and you can put up whatever you want, and it can be accessible to you or to others. So I had been, as a hobbyist, messing with this a bit, and I thought that I was in the free tier because they have a certain small amount that's below a threshold where they just say, oh, just use it. It's not even worth doing this. And so I said, okay, that's cool, because the thing I wanted to do was so tiny that I figured I'd fit within that, and even the usage that I was likely to have in the month should fall well within that. Well, something happened.
Past that?
Yeah, so I downloaded this Docker container, and a Docker image, and I created a Docker container for this particular app, and I worked on using it, and I could never quite get it to do what I wanted to, and I just kind of put it aside for a little while I got busy with life elsewhere. And I figured, well, I'm on the free tier, and I'm not even touching it, so I'm not expecting to get hit with my credit card or something else. So it should not be a financial impact. Well, that's what I thought. And then I started getting email from Amazon. Hey, by the way, you're going to go beyond the free tier this month, and we just wanted to let you know. And I'm like, okay. And then I said, how much beyond the free tier are we talking about? And they said, whew, this month it's going to be 75 cents. And I said, great.
Holy
Amazon,
cow.
This amount of my attention cost more than 75 cents.
Yeah.
So thanks for letting me know, but I'm going to let it ride. So time goes on, and they sent another email. Hey, by the way, we want to let you know you're experiencing this. It's going to go beyond the free tier. And I said, let me guess, 75 cents? They said 75 cents. Another month goes by. They said, it's going to go beyond the free tier. And I said, okay, how much is it going to be? They said, $8. And I said,
what?
That's a lot more. That's like 10 times more, you know,
than the 75
than
cents.
The 75 cents. So I said, well, I need to add this to my to-do list to get this squashed. And that was September. And as you know, in where I work in the higher ed industry, September gets kind of busy.
September gets busy.
October gets kind of busy. Things calm down about the middle of November. And that's when I said, oh, yeah, no, I have to get serious about this, because it went from $8 to $15.
Holy mother.
And I'm thinking to myself, this is a Docker container. It is not talking to anywhere. It is not receiving input from me. What is going on? And I don't feel like I ever got a straight answer for that. And of course, in this AWS world, there are millions upon millions of buttons and levers that exist, and different ways to structure all sorts of things. The types of services they provide change on what feels like a monthly basis. But if you are not in that world, it's tough to know how to do things effectively and efficiently. So I was following along with somebody who'd written about this 2 years prior, and some of the buttons had changed. So I, this past week, did get to turn off this as part of my end-of-the-year stuff, finally getting to my to-do list. And it was up to $15 a month, and I said, yeah, I need to get this taken care of, because that's not going in a good direction. So I had to go to my good old friend, Chatty G.
Chatty G!
And say, hey, Chatty G, tell me how I can make this go away. And it said, yeah, you know what? AWS has their own tool for AI. You know, we can certainly say you go in and go do this, but you might be better off talking to them directly.
Interesting.
And I said, that's interesting. So then I went over to Amazon's web services and clicked on the giant question mark. And they said, hey, sport, we're AI and we're here to help. What's going on? What can we do for you? And I said,
we're the government and we're here to help.
I said, hi, I want out. we're done here. So, and they said, okay, well, you'll need to make sure you turn off all these dependencies. Then you'll need to close out this. Then you'll need to close this thing out, and you shut this down. And then you should be all set. And I said, great. How much of this can you do for me? They said, none of it.
Right.
And I said, great. Okay, can you give me that list and, you know, break it down in every step, tell me what I should be looking for, where I should click, what I should be waiting for. And to its credit, in about 20 minutes or so of asking, doing, reporting back, asking, doing, the nice thing was the AI that was built in was able to check some of the background processes on my account and see, oh, yes, no, I see that you shut that down successfully. Great job.
Great job. Thank you. I'm four. Yeah. Can I have a juice box?
Yes. This is great. I got to get this done before nap time. Now, the nice thing about being an older guy is nap time doesn't sound so bad.
Yeah, the truth.
Nothing like a great nap. So we were able to get this accomplished. We were able to get everything shut down. I'm now not being hit for $15 a month. And while the project overall was not a success, I was able to learn several things about how complex that can be, but also how helpful some of the AI tools can be, because otherwise it would be a complete mess. And I'm thankful that that was around to provide me specific assistance and
that is
it was
nice.
Up to date.
I have to say I've been on Bluehost for about, I don't know, 80 years, and they're not cheap.
Sure.
But they are very helpful, and, well, they're not cheap because I'm on the unlimited plan. I kind of have to be because
right.
I've got 20, 30 years of sound bites stuff up there. But they've been also very helpful, and I almost always get a human.
You can talk to an actual human.
Yeah, and that's
humans
what I like.
Are the best.
Yeah.
But they're also tremendously expensive.
Well, yes, yes. And I know I'm paying for that. But
yes.
It also is nice to say, I think I did this right. Can you backstop me? Or what do I do next? And they always say, let me do it.
Well, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let me do it. Click, click, click. It's done. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Check to see that this happened and this happened.
My domain registrar is like that.
Okay, we're good. Great. I love that.
So I use hover.com to register my domains. They are not the cheapest, but they are, they're based in Canada, and they are, just like you might expect, tremendously polite. And exceptionally helpful. And the thing that I might deal with every 5 or 6 years in terms of how changing configuration and making sure I don't screw it up, they do that a dozen times a day. And they don't – it's no problem at all. They're happy to talk to you. They're very polite. I've let them know how much I love their service, and I'm willing to pay the premium because I get a human, and it gets done correctly the first time. And I never am on hold. And they never transfer me to other departments. The people that I talk to originally are the people who help me and that I thank and hang up the phone.
Yep. I spent 25 years as a systems administrator, and I know what that is worth.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to pay it to have somebody else click the buttons.
Right.
And absolutely.
It's not that much more expensive.
No, it isn't.
Compared to some of the others.
No, it isn't.
The value is way, way more than the price.
I do almost everything on my own. But every once in a while, it's like, I don't, they've changed something. I don't know where they put this.
Right.
I don't know exactly what this is asking me.
Suddenly, I have to do a DKIM record or an SPF record in my DNS to make sure
that
email flows.
And I do those three times a decade.
To. Right. Yeah. Precisely.
So, well, how
or
am I going
to... Or the spec changes.
Right.
Or things expire.
Right. So, yeah. I call them up, and every single time, because I just did this with a DKIM record.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, well, we can do that. Do you want us to do that? Yes, please.
That'd be great.
Okay, click, click, click. Okay, just check this, check this.
You're right.
Yep, yeah, yep. Okay, we're good. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right.
Have a nice day.
The website I use to check on all of these things and to help guide me into what needs to happen next is mxtoolbox.com, where you can put in your domain name, and it will go and inspect all of the things associated with your domain name to make sure that they are matching the specification for how things ought to appear, and make sure you didn't put an extra... quote character or an extra space or an extra equal sign where you shouldn't. Make sure everything is valid. And when I run into situations with customers and they don't have those things set up quite right, it lets me know precisely what I need to do to change it. And more often than not, that's folks with Google-powered workspaces who want to make sure that their email, particularly if they're doing mailing lists, they want to make sure that those things are correct, because a lot of recipient places will prevent you from delivering mail to them if you don't have those records set up correctly.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's what I use it for. I do the SNCC mailing list. And setting it up was, I moved from one service to another. And setting up the second service was, I had to remove all the things from the first service.
Right.
And add the second service. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to call. And I told them what I wanted to do. They said, oh, this, you want us to do it? Sure.
That sounds great.
Sure.
I think we'll both be happier that way.
Exactly right. You're off the phone faster. I get it done right. Perfect. So, yeah, I love that. I love that about that. Mm. They're good people. But in general, you'll find that those sorts of things are all over the web. I mean, there's just a lot of places you can run a website.
Yeah.
There are a lot of places that you can, you know, add your own databases and mm-hmm. run your own hardware, software and all that stuff. But getting a good company that helps you,
right,
stays out of your way when you don't need them and gets in your way when you do need them,
right,
that's the people you want.
That's the value add.
That's the value add right there. So, yeah, I'm
I think you're being attacked by your microphone.
My microphone
today.
Is.
It seems like it has a mind of its own. It can't quite.
It needs.
Figure
you
out
need
what
a new one like this one.
Yeah, I do need.
Oh, you got some fancy stuff over there.
Well, yeah. Well, he finally got one because, I mean, I could sit there and put it in position,
right?
And all of a sudden, I'm down here talking.
Oh yeah. No, because it would fall down.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I'd set it up because I this like it up out of the way so I can see what's going on.
Right.
I got to watch what's going on the board, so it's easier to have it up there. But it never would stay.
Right.
They were so old.
Yeah.
That one needs to be retired to.
Hey,
well, no, this one was just, and I push it up and down all the time. So
yeah.
You're
not the only one that uses it,
Yeah. So
whatever.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. I just tightened it up. It's fine now. Ish. But more than it was.
Right.
You know, before when we were talking, digressing a little bit here.
Us?
About the different changes that have happened so far. And, you know, listening to you guys talk about, you know, this connector and that connector. And I'm sitting back and thinking, 30 years ago, when we were starting out this show and that,
uh-huh.
and you just had that box.
Right.
And the only thing you hooked up to it was a keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
And all the changes that we have seen in the decades that we've been doing this show. And, you know, we're coming up on a break, though, but I want to get into some of those changes that, you know, going from, say, like the drives, RLLL and FMFs and, you know, the SCSIs to the current stuff now, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah. No, it's true.
And how much easier it's gotten.
And in the 30 years, you know, this honker of a machine that sat on our desktop, now you can put it in a darn watch and it's more powerful.
I would say that the technology has gotten way better. The socialization around the technology has gotten way, way more complex.
Way more complex. Absolutely right. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. I want to stop for a minute and thank Steve Ray for not coming in. For starting the StreamYard stream so we could get online before all this happened. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Didn't expect it to be that loud.
What?
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
It's Whisper Quiet.
And I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm...
I want to just continue.
Just shocked.
What I was
At 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites.
Yeah, just to continue on what we were talking about, though, just give people a perspective. You know, like I was saying, you had that big honker of a box, you know, it had mm-hmm. dual floppy drives and all that.
Oh, yeah.
And what we've gone through that we have seen in just our lifetime, as far as, you know, we had CD-ROM drives and the different capacities on the back of the board. You know, the back of the motherboard, you'd sit
the
there.
Ports.
The ports have changed so much. We used to have a SCSI connector. You also had to have a printer connector.
Right.
It didn't have network connection.
Nope.
You had serial ports. You had different style mouse and keyboard connectors.
Yeah, those were serial mouse.
Yeah. Right?
Before USB.
It was purple for the keyboard and green for the mouse, but they were the same plug.
PS2 connector.
Yeah, and then the SCSIs, how you had to do with SCSI magic.
I was a Mac user in the 90s. I know all about SCSI.
And if you didn't have
the Terminator
on tight enough.
There was a lot of voodoo involved in SCSI in the 90s. But it was not always predictable.
And of course, Apple tried to change the way it was pronounced.
Oh, yes.
They tried to make it sexy.
They want to call it
SCSI. Right.
Yes.
Right.
And then just networking. I can remember setting up a couple different law offices before they had, literally a junction box where you could tie everything to. No, we were running cable from one to the other to the other.
Token ring.
Had to have the last one terminated.
Right.
Because otherwise,
BNC connectors.
The whole network went down.
That was the PC Junior.
Yeah.
Used token ring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they doubled the speed of token ring by putting two tokens on.
Yeah.
On the ring.
And now, one, we don't have CD-ROM drives anymore.
No
more floppy drives.
True.
Everything is USB 2 or 3. And you got usually on the back of the machine, you'll see maybe an HDMI. Because VGA and EGA are long gone, folks.
Those 9-pin connectors.
Yeah. Those are history. Everything is HDMI, which is definitely better, cleaner, sharper images and everything else, which also, in essence, makes it easier on your eyes. The strain and stress on the eyes nowadays, we don't get the burn-in on the screens like
true.
If you left a program up. Yeah, the CRTs.
But that killed off the whole industry of screensavers.
Yeah.
The CRTs, everybody was
using out my screen. Yeah. I just for the heck of it the other day, I installed the Linux screensaver package, the X screensaver, so that I could run Bouncing Cows.
Bouncing Cows?
I
must have missed that one.
A cow, a trampoline, together.
That's all you had to say, cow and trampoline.
But there's more. Together, they fight crime.
And
you can have up to, I think it's 8 cows on the screen bouncing all at once. I just put that on
And what kind of crime do they fight? Do they get into that?
It's just bouncing cows.
Okay, don't think too hard.
The password, don't think about it. The blurb is a cow, a trampoline, together they fight crime. But it's just cows bouncing up and down on the screen. It's hysterical.
I was more of a flying toasters guy.
It's hysterical. Yeah, I have that one.
Yeah, and then
there's 40 of them.
Or the aquarium.
I have that one.
That was
all
a very
fish.
Big 90s thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the thing that I think I appreciate the most on a day-to-day basis is how much better two things have gotten. Batteries and how much more efficient CPUs are in general.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that goes along with the battery. That's what makes the battery more efficient, part of it. Because
you got to have both.
You got to have both.
A large amount of capacity per cubic volume and a very efficient way to have the processor sip on that. Rather than guzzle it.
I was watching videos
of the old lead-acid batteries that people used to shove into portables.
Yes.
And that you could get a whopping 45 minutes of runtime on this. And I was like, oh my goodness.
I had I believe it was a Dell, but anyway, we bought laptops that had two ports on either side.
Mm-hmm.
You could put a CD-ROM drive or a floppy or batteries in either of them.
This is about 25 years ago.
Yeah.
I remember.
So we would for people who were going somewhere on a trip, we'd give them an extra battery, and they'd pull out the CD-ROM drive,
whichever one.
And you have a battery on one side and a battery on the other side, and they get 5 solid hours.
Yeah.
Of processing.
And it only weighed 12 pounds.
The old Osborne 1 was 25 pounds.
Right.
It was portable if you were Lou Ferrigno, I used to say in those days. But
it was a lunchbox, but much, much bigger.
Yeah.
There, with a CRT in it.
That's another point. Again, going back to this honker box to a Raspberry Pi 5.
Well, which has more power than any of the things we were talking
or
about.
A smartwatch. Yeah. Right.
And what it can do, you know, and you can hook up external hard drives to it. I mean, you're talking about terabyte hard drives.
Yes.
And do them in stacks.
And by the way, they're SSDs or they're M.2s now, so they look like a stick of gum.
Yeah.
Well, and the ones I've seen are the size of a postage stamp.
Yeah, the little M.3.
The micros.
No, what do they call them?
NVMe's.
2.something.
Yeah, it's incredible to see those things. Yeah. And of course, there was a point where you could actually desolder and resolder things and repair them, but now that's all entirely done by robots.
No, forget it. With the surface mounts and everything else, it's unbelievable.
You literally have to have a microscope and work.
Well, because now they don't use solder guns anymore.
Right.
They're using what they call liquid solder,
yeah.
And they'll put the solder down, and then they take a heat gun to it.
Right, and it's like paste.
Heat gun will then form it to the connectors. So you're not getting the jumpers, you know, to over over solder and cause dry joints bridges, and everything else.
No, but that allows all of the components to be in a much smaller area.
Yeah.
So you can build things smaller. They can talk to each other faster because they are located that way.
Raspberry Pi now sells a M.2 SSD, yes. Postage stamp size, 256 gig for $50.
Hmm.
512 gig for $60.
You know what we should talk about that I don't think we've talked about yet is what the prices of RAM have been like lately. I've been hearing from multiple people that the prices of RAM are through the roof.
And it all has to do with AI. Well, we talked about this last week on the show. Micron, which makes the Crucial line of memory, has stopped making Crucial. Because it was a consumer brand of memory.
Mm-hmm.
They are now selling the same exact memory for 3 or 4 or 5 times the price to companies that want to do AI.
So venture capital is saying, I'm going to outbid your manufacturing capacity. I'm going to buy up your manufacturing capacity for the next N number of months. And that means that you're not going to be making products that are going to go into the consumer space. We're going to stay entirely in the enterprise space.
Yep.
And that means that the supply is going to go down for people like you and me.
And then the price is
going to shoot up.
Yep. I was a little bit ahead of the curve because I bought a brand new machine last year.
Mm-hmm.
Last December, I bought a 32 gig of RAM, 4 terabyte, 1 and 4 terabyte M.2s to put together. Because I knew prices were going to go up.
Uh-huh.
I was a little ahead of the curve.
That's good.
Because it didn't happen until now.
Yeah.
But
it wasn't that long ago that we were in the same situation regarding video cards. And
I got a good video card out of the deal, too.
People that wanted to do crypto mining or other high-end computational analysis for machine learning, those are all things, and early LLMs and things that they wanted to run locally. Those are all things that relied upon the massive computing power of video cards and graphics processors.
And all of those are going to...
Now, those have gotten reasonable, but then
RAM shot up, and now you can... There are drivers for graphics cards for AI now because of, you know, adding Nano Banana and all the other video imaging software. So those are going to go back up again.
Mm-hmm.
If you're buying, you know, that's, again, another reason for, from my point of view, to buy a used computer and put Linux on it. It's going to cost you less. You get the same power and speed you think you're getting now.
Right. Like we talked about earlier, you just continue to get the security capabilities.
You get all the security capabilities on an older machine. I would love to get my hands on a decent Mac, old Mac, Intel Mac to put Linux on. I've got one, but the thermal paste, I've got two of them, and the thermal paste has let go.
Sure. Yeah.
And so opening those things up is a son of a pup.
That means that for our listeners, that means that the computer's ability to take the heat that's generated as a byproduct of the CPU calculations.
They overheat like crazy.
And push it outside of the laptop space is diminished, and it acts more like putting on a winter hat while you're trying to exercise.
Right.
Just makes you want to exercise a little bit less, and it makes the computer in that role throttle itself down and not work as fast.
And sometimes shut off completely.
Yes, can be.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't have a Mac running right now, but I've got a half a dozen laptops that used to be Windows from, this one's an easy 15 years old,
mm-hmm.
to something that's only about 3 years old. Every one of them runs like a charm under Linux. No problems.
Great.
All right, to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Oh, hello. I use Yahoo email, and I've used it successfully for the last 3-4 years. And all of a sudden, started yesterday, when, you know, you click on new message, you're going to send a new message, and it's got the to line to who you're sending it to. The cursor goes there. Subject, the cursor goes there, but I can't get, I'm not able to write a message, you know, in the box where you're supposed to send a message. Am I doing something wrong?
Hmm. Are you doing this at Yahoo's website?
Yeah, Yahoo Mail.
Okay.
Yes. I've always, it just stopped yesterday all of a sudden.
That's strange. I'm trying to think of other things that have happened recently. I know some browsers have updated themselves. Do you know if you're using Google Chrome or Firefox or a different browser?
I use Chrome.
Okay. So I know that Chrome had some pretty big updates this past week, and it, I wonder if those things might have impacted it. The thing that I would try, and I'm going to make an assumption here because I don't use Google Mail nearly as often as you do. When you're in the to line...
Yahoo Mail.
I'm sorry, yes. Yes, Yahoo Mail. My mistake. The tab key on your keyboard should allow you to jump from the to line to the CC line or to the subject line. Mm-hmm. And then if you tap it again after that, my prediction is that the browser will jump your cursor down to where you put in the body.
Okay, while Dennis was talking, I was signing in. It sent me my verification code.
Yes.
I put in the verification code. I agreed to all the new changes. I don't log into Yahoo Mail very often.
Okay.
And I just did that, and exactly what Dennis just said. I created a thing, and it asked me for a name, and I gave it that, and I hit tab, and it asked me for another name, and I didn't give it that. I just hit tab. It went to CC. I hit tab again. It went to BC. I hit tab again. I put in the
subject,
and then I hit tab again, and it went down another line where I could just start typing in a blue box.
So that might be something to try.
And you don't get that?
No, I haven't been.
Okay.
The thing is, started yesterday. Sometimes it was working. Sometimes it wasn't. And today, this morning, it hasn't been working, you know, the cursor where you want to send the message. I understand what you're saying. Put the address in you're sending it to, then a little subject line, and then it should automatically go down to the where you're going to write the message. And sometimes it was doing it and sometimes not, and now it isn't. I hit refresh. Do I need to empty anything out?
Okay, no. One of the things I just did was I did it by clicking on things, and it lets me click in the username, and I put that in. Then I click in the subject, and I put in test. Then I clicked down, and it wouldn't take it until I moved the cursor even a little farther down, and it changed from an arrow to the insert.
Like an I-beam.
And then I could type.
Yeah, it's a little finicky. I've been playing around with it, and like you said, that's what it's doing.
But if you, yes, and that is just their end. That has nothing to do with you. If you, after you type your subject, if you hit tab, it will automatically jump down into the body and put a blue box around it for just a moment. And that'll tell you you're in the right place to start typing.
Well, I will start doing that and see how I make out. But thank you very much for the information. I really appreciate it.
You got it, James. Thanks for giving us a call today.
Okay, have a nice Christmas.
You too.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye. You too. Bye-bye. Yeah, all right, there you go. Ooh, I haven't sent a message from Yahoo since 2022.
Okay.
Okay, I think I can log out now.
I keep trying to get my wife off of Yahoo Mail. I mean, it's a piece of junk.
Mm. Well, it's not great. It's not great.
It's from a different era when people were using Hotmail.
That's back there with AOL.
It still works. It's a little finicky as
well. The filters in that are for junk.
Well, right. As James said, it's a little finicky. But yes, the filters on more modern.
You're being kind.
Right. The filters on, for example, Gmail are wonderful. I almost never see spam.
Yeah.
I mean, if I go look at my spam folder, I will see a lot of spam.
I mean, that was the whole reason I switched to them.
They do an amazing job killing spam.
Yeah.
And so I use it for everything now. I can't tell you how many email addresses I have at Gmail. And because they're free. Go ahead and get
more. And each one comes with 15 gig of free storage. I love it.
There are programs that will let you combine all that free storage.
Right, yeah.
Into a single.
They try to do something clever.
And I haven't tried those yet. I don't know how well they work.
Yeah, I worry about that because if all of a sudden something gets messed up.
Right. So
seems like a great way to paint yourself into a corner.
Well, exactly.
Real fast. Yeah.
Again, you don't have enough backup. So as one of many backups,
sure,
it's probably not a bad idea.
Hey, and with the holidays coming up, what better way to say I love you than with the gift of a backup?
Of a backup.
So head over and find your favorite online backup place and print out a gift certificate and give it to that special someone who needs to have an additional layer of their.
Well,
at soundbites.org, you will see the backup under some important links.
Okay.
And it will take you to my backup page, which has lots of backup programs on it. I personally recommend pCloud because I use it.
Okay.
And, you know, I get a couple of pennies if you use that link to get the lifetime subscription. But, you know, we have 500 gigabytes of storage.
Nice.
For lifetime. And I'm using about 40% of it.
Okay.
Right.
I've been a Backblaze customer. And again,
Backblaze is great.
They're not the cheapest.
Right.
But in terms of does the process work in the background? Does it let me know only when things are wrong? And every once in a while, just give me a thumbs up and say, by the way, things are cool. Everything's looking good.
Yep.
You know, carry on.
It works for my wife's Linux machine. It works for my Windows machine. It works for my Linux machine.
Yeah. It's very careful with the amount of resources it uses.
Yep.
It works in the background. It doesn't get in my way. And it operates entirely autonomously. And it's not, again, it's not the cheapest, but it is very good at what it does and so much better than some of the alternatives.
Right. So if you are going to get pCloud, please use my link and send it to everyone you ever heard of.
One of the other things about that storage with Google, you know, like you said, if you've got multiple drives, accounts, well, within Google Drive, when you go into your file manager, you can set it up to have it show three of those storages, and you can map them to drive letters.
Right.
So I've set it up so that I have the three. And the most important thing that I worry about always is my banking information. So I back it up to those three. Because my photos, I don't worry about that because I've got the Pixel, and it just goes up to my Google Photos. You know, and they're all up there, and you know, I don't ever have the regret of, oh, I meant to back that
one. I would check that because I don't think they're free anymore.
No, they're not. But I haven't blown past my wife, on the other hand.
Well, and that's why one of the things I suggest is if you are an Amazon Prime customer, we are because of the free shipping for the market.
Yep, the market.
But we also, of course, get Amazon Music and Amazon Prime Video. But you also get unlimited picture storage.
Yep. Right.
Holy moly!
Yeah.
Believe me when I tell you I'm taking advantage of that.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. I do. That's where mine are backed up. Yeah.
If you happen to have some of those Echo devices that have screens, you can also dedicate a certain playlist to appear on those.
Exactly right.
So you get sort of a digital picture frame thing.
Yep. So it's really nice. And if you are a Google user, you can, you know, $2 a month. So what, $25 a year for 100 gig?
Right.
Yeah.
That's not a lot of money.
No.
2 terabytes That's for $10 a month. $120.
Pizza and wings would cost you more than that.
Well, exactly right. $120 a year for 2 terabytes of data? Come on.
All right. So last topic before we run out of time.
All right.
In the year 2025.
Yes.
What do you think, in your own personal lives, your best value technology purchase has been, or the thing that you have used this year? And I'll go first. I'll go first. The thing that I use every single day that if you'd asked me 20 years ago, would I be doing this? I would have said no, is smart light bulbs.
Really?
Hmm. I get up every morning and I ask Alaska to turn on the bedroom. Or, if I'm really smart, the night before I say, Alaska, turn on the bedroom at 6:30 tomorrow morning, and it will say.
Now, I do know you can say every day at half an hour before sunset.
Yes.
Turn on the light, or half an hour after sunrise, turn off the light.
I have my living room set to do that. So it's based on the whatever calendar and sundown and sun up.
Right, right.
I have it set to turn on the living room lights at sunset and to turn them off at 11:30, which is also my signal to, hey, dummy, go to bed.
Oh, yes. When suddenly the room is plunged into darkness.
But and here's how I know. At first, I just got used to it. I didn't think about it. Here's how I knew that I had a problem. Not a problem, but here's how I knew I had become very accustomed to it. I went on a trip last summer to Penn State to go to the MacAdmins conference, stayed in a hotel, tried to wake up in the morning and yell to the room to turn on the lights. And the room just sat there and said, I don't know what you're talking about.
Didn't do anything.
And I had to stumble my way over to the light switch like a Neanderthal.
Like a Neanderthal.
And do that. So I will say, for the year 2025, the thing that I've used most often that has impacted my life the most on a very day-to-day basis has been smart lighting.
I have not done smart lighting because back when I first looked at it, it was so insecure.
True.
Unsecure.
I opted for the Philips Hue stuff, which, again, not the cheapest.
Not the cheapest, but very secure.
Very secure. And for those of us of a certain age who used to use incandescent light bulbs, pre-LEDs or compact fluorescents, and you had to change them every few months,
yeah,
this was a bigger deal. But with LEDs, the money you put in up front has lasted me years and years and years.
For me, it's that NUC. I got to be honest.
Okay.
I've put so many... The Plex server that I set up.
Yes.
I've got all my DVDs on it. I can watch any movie I want, anytime I want, TV shows, all that stuff. And I just click over to my Plex app.
Okay.
Yep. And up it comes on every TV in the house. And
right.
Life is a beautiful thing.
Okay.
I can't say enough about it.
I know we're running out of time, but
no. For me, well, as Nick knows, I was waiting on the software package.
Yeah, okay. It
was a 2-year wait.
Wow.
It was a 2-year wait, but I got to give this guy credit. It was called Ham Radio Deluxe.
Okay.
He rewrote the program from the ground up and did away with Microsoft Access.
Oh,
and we're now using SQL,
uh-huh.
And it is a screaming program. We love it.
Wow.
SQL well Lite, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Very fast.
Cool.
I just wrote a program that lets me catalog all my thumb drives.
Oh, interesting.
And saves it in the SQLite program. I couldn't find one that did what I wanted, so I wrote one. The heck with it.
Okay.
All right, that's it. We are done for another week. I want to thank each and every person who called in. I want to thank Dennis Worster for taking time out of his very busy life to come over here and nonsense around with us for a couple hours. I want to thank Dave Enright for mostly staying awake throughout a large part of this show. I want to thank Steve Enright for not...
and the Rumble.
Steve Enright.
Ooh.
Dave, no.
Wow.
Steve Ray for not... I only had one Rumble. That's another thing I want to thank Dave for. I want to thank Steve Ray for not showing up at all. I want to thank each and every one of you. Please, whatever holiday you're celebrating right now, enjoy the living heck right out of it, will you? And we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?